Welcome to Books in the Freezer, a podcast dedicated to the deliciously disturbing world of horror fiction. Today, I am joined by author Brian McCauley, and we are talking books you should read if you enjoy the works of R.L. Stine, specifically his middle grade series, Goosebumps. So, reader beware, you're in for a scare. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. What a dream to get to talk to you about Goosebumps. Ugh.
I am so excited. I was absolutely a Goosebumps kid.
Yeah, it's a thing. And it really, I posted something, a meme, I made a meme involving Goosebumps today, and the reaction was big. A lot of people just have such an attachment of memories to those books. It's great.
Did you make that meme, the Phoebe Bridgers meme?
I created it.
I've been seeing it everywhere.
My Canva skills are very limited, but when I saw that image of her with her big smile holding her Grammys, I was like, what if they were Goosebumps books?
My mom was always like, please do not come home with more of those scary books.
I know. And you're like, but they just keep making more of them and I need them all.
I remember, because I was in like fourth or fifth grade and we had to do accelerated reader. And I kept just wanting to read Goosebumps. Yep. And they told me that those were too low of a level. They were like third grade level. And I'm like, I understand, but I need to read these books.
Yeah, that's just rude. Come on.
Let me live.
Yeah. Let me have these little joys before I have to deal with adulting.
Man, so what was your personal history with Goosebumps?
Yeah, it was, I don't remember when I was first exposed to it, but like I have vivid memories of, I was a short bike ride away from my local public library as a kid. And I remember going and getting, I feel like I checked out Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, just like on an endless loop. And then once Goosebumps started coming in, I was like, oh, this is the next level of just, then I, yeah, started to collect them and they just, yeah, really hit that sweet spot of just scary enough at the right age to kind of like lay the groundwork for horror fandom.
They really are. I feel like they're a lot of people's entry point into horror.
Yeah. And into reading in general. Like, yeah. I don't think I would have, you know, been on such a path towards being a reader were it not for that series really getting me excited about picking up a new book.
My first memory with Goosebumps, I don't remember what grade I was. I must have been maybe second grade, but I went to our school library and I checked out. It was one of those like multiple story ones. It was a choose your own adventure and it had like a holographic cover.
With the purple alligator on the cover? Was it that?
I don't remember if it was that one, but I was obsessed with it and I kept it so long that the library sent a note home that I had to return it. It's like, oh, we're going to need that and the completed Tales of Beatrix Potter back. Thank you.
Such a well-rounded reader. There was probably a long waiting list too for it. People needed their choose your own adventure experience.
I know. And I was like, oh, I'm just having too much fun with it.
Yeah.
And then I remember loving the show when it came out.
Yeah.
Absolutely obsessed.
That also, I feel like, hit at the perfect time because like I was already such a big fan of the books. And then it was like, oh my God, now there's going to be a TV show. And it, you know, it paired quite nicely with Are You Afraid of the Dark? You know, just as like sort of horror anthology for kids.
Yeah, that was a good time for horror middle grade media.
Yeah, it really, you know, you don't know what you got till it's gone.
A few years ago, I started showing them to my son. Some of them were a little too scary for him. I think we did not finish Night in Terror Tower. That was intense for him.
Yeah.
But he was obsessed with Piano Lessons Can Be Murder. That was his favorite one. He just wanted to watch it on a loop.
Yes. That one we may be talking about later, because that one definitely, I have such vivid memories as well. And like my best friend growing up, who I used to like read Goosebumps book with, his mother was my piano teacher. And so this was an extra spooky factor.
Did she talk about your hands? Yeah. Man, did you have a favorite?
I mean, the one that always sticks out to me is the Haunted Mask. Both the cover, like I used to draw a lot as a kid too. And I feel like all of my drawings of like monster faces were just riffs on that Haunted Mask cover with like the big teeth and the kind of glowing eyes. And also that episode is really creepy. It like ends with her face being a mask, like on a stick. And it's really like bad special effects, but that makes it even creepier. There's something really kind of like uncanny valley about it. But yeah, the idea of like putting on a mask that you can't take off and that's like slowly turning you into it was like, ooh.
I was going to say, I think that was a big appeal for me as a kid, was that sometimes the endings were dark and leaned into. I didn't feel like it was holding my hand or that everything was going to get waved away and like this was all a misunderstanding. You just thought about this wrong. It's like, no, these kids are stuck in this weird time portal forever and they're living this day on a loop. That is their reality now.
Yep.
And that's the end of the book. Goodbye.
Sleep well, kid. Your piano teacher's trying to murder you. It's fine. It's like, yeah, no, it's true. They did not. There was none of the like rug pull of, like you said, of like, no, it was fine. It was just, you kids have wild imaginations kind of thing. It was like, no, no, murder and monsters are happening.
Yeah, sometimes they had dark endings. I'm trying to remember. Maybe it was the be careful what you wish for. I think it's called Be Careful What You Wish For.
Yeah, with the crystal ball on the cover.
Yeah, and then at the end, like a popular girl says she wants to be looked at and she just turns into a statue. She can't move. She can't verbalize another wish. Like she is stuck there as a statue forever.
Yeah.
Conscious.
There's no turning back from that. That's horrifying. That's the one that I remember it most from the episode. It might be the one you mentioned, the Terror Tower one. It was the one where there was a dumbwaiter and there was a story. It didn't happen in this book, but it was the story of the place that there was a little boy who lived upstairs and they would send up his strawberry ice cream in the dumbwaiter. And one day the dumbwaiter didn't come up and he reached up out to get it and he fell all the way down and died. And they like describe like his blood mixing with strawberry ice cream, which is like a really horrifying visual for a child.
Oh my God. I know exactly which one you're talking about. And it's... I feel like it's got house in the title. Like it's one of those, there's like five of them that have house in the title. But I remember that one because I always checked that one out because the girl's name in it was Stephanie. And I was
yes.
But yeah, like it's like her and her friend go to this local haunted house where they like give like a walking tour, right? Where it's like, ooh, the spooky old house. But I remember even at that age, I'm like, well, I'm nothing like this girl who is a prankster. And it's like, I'm not taking these warnings seriously. Like, I'm the person in the movie that's like, we shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah.
The guy said we shouldn't do this.
Your Goosebumps book would be one chapter long. It would be called No Thanks, Dead House.
God, yeah. Now I'm remembering the strawberry ice cream. God, that's dark.
It's so dark. Because it's also taking such a childhood special thing and just putting blood in it. It's just
awful. Oh, man. I loved the ones that just had crazy plot twists. Like, yep. I loved Welcome to Camp Nightmare.
So I always confuse that one with Camp Jelly Jam.
Yeah.
Is that... Which one? Jelly Jam is the one with like the really toothy counselor on the cover, right? But Camp
I don't remember what the cover of Camp Nightmare is, but it's like this kid goes to camp and he's just really suspicious of everything. And then at the end, his parents pick him up and they say, like, you passed the test and you are ready for our next assignment on Earth. Like they're aliens.
What? That's so, so wild. Yeah. I did not remember that.
Wow. Or Shocker on Shock Street was another one that had like the double plot twist.
Because that was the one with the giant praying mantis, the like monster movie that...
Yeah, where like they think they're being chased by stuff, but then it ends up being part of a movie.
Right.
But then the two kids are robots.
Yeah, I feel like that's the twist for a few of them. It's just like, psych, it's a robot.
But I was just like, I got hit with two plot twists.
Yeah, because this was also, you know, the 90s when it was like computers and robots were still like a faraway dream idea.
Oh, man. Okay, so I also asked listeners for their favorites. And what do you think the top three were, right, if you had to guess?
If I had to guess, I feel like Haunted Mask is usually pretty popular. Night of the Living Dummy is just so iconic. And what would my third be? I mean, Welcome to Dead House, but that's like number one. So maybe that's why I'm thinking.
A lot of people did say Welcome to Dead House.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely The Haunted Mask, Say Cheese and Die.
Oh, of course.
That was the big one. A lot of love for Stay Out of the Basement.
Yes!
I was not expecting all the love for Werewolf of Fever Swamp. Apparently, everyone loves that one. And I was like, I had no idea that was such a beloved book and episode. The Ghost Next Door, Let's Get Invisible, Piano Lessons Can Be Murder, Monster Blood 2, and Ghost Beach
were the ones.
Yeah.
I mean, we're gonna be touching on some of these today. Don't Go in the Basement might be my favorite of all the covers, because that plant hand is just so well drawn and creepy. And yeah, I don't really remember the plot. I think it's that their dad is like a mad scientist in the basement, but that image is just...
Yeah. Ooh. Oh, I'm wearing my Welcome to Horrorland shirt. Ah,
yes! I have a Night of the Living Dummy shirt and a Abominable Snowman of Pasadena shirt, which I feel like is one of the real far out left field ones, but the cover is just so kind of goofy and fun that I was like, yeah, oh, that's a good shirt.
It's a fun title.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Did you watch the new Disney Plus Goosebumps with Justin Long?
I did not. I feel like I just in general, I'm not watching a lot on Disney Plus and probably need to cancel my subscription. But that was one I was curious about. But did you watch it?
I watched like the first episode and it was good. And I just did not go back. I don't know why. I think it's because it's coming out weekly and I just have a short attention span. And if they're not all there to hit at once, my attention span just forgets to go back.
Totally.
So no, I did hear that it was good.
I heard that it gets pretty dark, which, yeah.
It seemed a bit more teen oriented, like it was about high schoolers.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Justin Long is a horror icon now.
Scream Queen. Yeah. Scream King.
Yeah.
I did love the Fear Street movies that were on Netflix.
Yes. They were really fun. And I appreciated that they mixed up the eras to make it like, you know, they each had a different vibe to them, but still had some continuity. And I'm not familiar enough with I don't remember the Fear Street books as much. I know I've read a few of them, but I don't know how much they pulled from those or kind of veered in their own direction. But yeah, they were straight pretty intense slashers.
I know I didn't read a ton of Fear Street either. I kind of want to go back and read a few fun.
And the next, because the next one is the Prom Queen?
Prom Queen, yeah.
Which just the cover and title, I'm like, I want to read that. It's given me, what's the Prom Night 2, Hello Mary Lou? Have you seen that movie?
Yes.
So nuts.
You know what? controversial opinion, much better than Prom Night 1.
Oh, 100%.
Okay. People, I don't know if people love it. I know it's like Jamie Lee Curtis dancing, I guess.
Yeah, to me, the first one's kind of boring. But I'm also someone who thinks that like the first Friday the 13th is the worst of the series, which I feel like also gets more flack.
I feel like I've heard that as a take, but
yeah,
I don't know. I'm nostalgic for it.
I get it.
I don't know. I think I've said this a few times on the podcast. I binged them all within a week. Yes. So I have a hard time telling them apart. And because totally. They're so similar, I'm like, I don't know. Which one is the one with Crispin Glover? Like,
part four, the final chapter, which I just saw on the big screen on Friday the 13th this past year. And it was really fun to see with the full theater. But yeah, they do certainly blend together.
I think that's why I like the wackier ones. I love Jason Takes Manhattan and Jason X.
Yes, me too. Like, I will always defend, especially Jason Takes Manhattan, because it's like people are like, he's barely in Manhattan, but it's Jason on a cruise ship, which is also fun. Like,
yeah, like my enjoyment on it is not hinging on how much Manhattan there is. He kicks a guy's head off and it goes into a dumpster.
Yeah, the things they do in Manhattan definitely earn it, because yeah, even just the shots of him on the subway and then the punks in Times Square, that what's now just like a gif of him kicking their boombox. Just got a lot out of it.
Also, I saw there is an upcoming Fear Street horror anthology.
Oh yes, I'm very excited for that. The cover is super nostalgic.
Yeah, so I'm definitely gonna have to check that out. I think Brianna Morgan is editing it.
Oh, she's awesome. And yeah, I think that they just announced that Haley Newland is narrating it for the audiobook.
Oh cool,
which is awesome. Yeah,
means I gotta read more Fear Street, so I kind of get the references and the vibes.
Yeah, how many Fear Street books are there?
I feel like there's a lot. I went to I stopped by a library like a few years ago and they were getting rid of some, and so for like 10 cents a piece, and so I got like 20 of them.
Yes.
But they're very random. So yeah. I just have kind of just like 20 random Fear Street books.
I'm like, there's a, you know, I just moved to Arizona, and the Historical Society is about to do a big book sale. They said they have over 50,000 books. And my first instinct was like, I'm so excited, I can't wait. But then I remembered that I now live in like Mormon country. And a lot of the folks I know who left Mormonism are like, oh yeah, we were not allowed to read horror or any of that. So I don't know how much horror and Goosebumps and Fear Street I'm going to find in this book sale, but I'm going to try.
This episode is brought to you by Fangoria, the world's best horror and cult film magazine since 1979. Listeners can use code BOOKSINTHEFREEZER to get 20% off their order. That includes, of course, merchandise and first-time subscriptions and single issues of the magazine. Not only are there tons of articles and interviews about upcoming horror movies, there's a regular segment by Stephen Graham Jones all about slashers called Slasher Nation. So you're going to want a copy. So again, that is code BOOKSINTHEFREEZER. And thank you, Fangoria, for supporting the show.
All right. Well, should we talk about some books?
Let's get into it.
All right, my first read-alike is for the classic, Night of the Living Dummy. And I am pairing this with How to Sell a Haunted House by Grady Hendrix. And I'm going to say, if you grew up reading Goosebumps and are thinking about venturing into horror, I would say you can't go wrong with Grady Hendrix. He's a writer who knows the tropes, has fun with them, but they are still books with heart.
100%.
So Night of the Living Dummy. Synopsis. Lindy names the ventriloquist dummy she finds Slappy. Slappy is kind of ugly, but he's a lot of fun. Lindy's having a great time learning how to make Slappy move and talk. But Chris is jealous of all the attention her sister is getting. It's no fair. Why does Lindy have all the luck? Christy decides to get a dummy of her own. She'll show Lindy. Then weird things begin to happen. Nasty things. Evil things. No way a dummy can be causing all this trouble. Or is there? First of all, Slappy, I think, is the face of Goosebumps. He is iconic. Like, he is like what my son thinks of when he thinks of Goosebumps on like a visual level. Like,
yeah.
It's Slappy.
Yeah, I feel like he is now the most iconic ventriloquist dummy in the history of ventriloquist dummies. That face and like just the angle of the cover too, he's kind of like off kilter with the jaw open. It's just haunting.
I remember going, like, all these are memories of me being in my school library and just like sitting in the S section of the middle grade section. And I remember just staring at that cover and being creeped out and just staring at it for like several minutes, just looking at it.
That's amazing. Cause it is, it's just a wide-eyed, like Slappy staring into your soul kind of cover. If you move to one side, the eyes follow you.
I remember being brave enough to finally check it out and read it. I was proud of myself. But in How to Sell a Haunted House, there is also a doll of sorts named Pupkin. And there's a few similarities because this is also about a pair of siblings who have issues with each other. This is a pair of grieving siblings who are left with the task of cleaning out their parents' home after their unexpected death. I think Grady Hendrix is known for kind of like funny horror. This one gets pretty sad. It opens up with the parents' death and now the brother and sister picking up the pieces and deciding what to do with this estate. And then, you know, all of this stress. And then on top of that, possibly being tormented by a supernatural doll. Also, like, the stuff the doll does is horrifying. Like, it went there so many times where I put the book down. I'm like, he did what?
Yeah, it was much more violent than I was expecting. Because Grady's books are always fun. And this one really, like you said, it was like, it goes to dark grief places, but and has that heart. But yeah, Pupkin gets real scary.
How to Sell a Haunted House, I would put it in the fridge. I had to put it down several times. I don't know. I have I can't with like eyes.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to leave it at that. I can't with eyes. But I highly recommend that. And obviously, you got to watch Night of the Living Dummy.
Yeah. That's just an absolute classic. And the dummy looks different in the show than he does on the cover, if I remember correctly. But then in the movie, they went back to the original design. It's like he has that black side part. But in
the show, he has like, it's like light brown hair.
All right. So my first pick is Deep Trouble, which is Goosebumps book with the underwater shot of like a hammerhead shark, which is actually pretty misleading for what the book is about. And the synopsis for it is Billy and his sister Sheena are visiting their uncle Dr. Deep. Oh, Dr. Deep on a tiny Caribbean island. It's the perfect place to go exploring underwater, and Billy's ready for an adventure. There's only one rule to remember: stay away from the coral reefs. Still, the reefs are so beautiful, so peaceful. Billy can't resist. But he's not alone in the water. Something's lurking deep below the surface. Something dark and scaly. Something half human, half fish. So, this is ultimately a mermaid story. And it's one where, like, the mermaids at first seem to be the scary thing, but then you find out that they're actually pretty cool and they're not scary, and that these awful men are trying to capture and kill the mermaids. And so I think, if I remember correctly, and then Billy has to try to help the mermaids. So the book I am pairing this with is Merciless Waters by Ray Knowles. This is an indie novella from Bridgesgate Press that came out just at the end of last year. It is not exactly a mermaid story, but it has sea creatures of sorts. It has bad men of sorts. And it's about an all-female crew aboard this ship called the Scylla. And they're just constantly traveling and living in a constant state of the present. And Jack has this very possessive relationship with Lily, these two women, and they come across a man floating in the water and pull him aboard, and his presence on the ship starts to shift the dynamics, both interpersonally and sort of supernaturally. I don't want to reveal too much because it's a short novella, but it's so good. It's just like just really luscious prose and just like raw emotion, and the sheer creativity of the world that Ray built in such a short amount of time was fantastic. So yeah, if you're in the mood for underwater kind of quick read horror, definitely pairing Merciless Waters with Deep Trouble would be the way to go.
I've been saying that around. I do want to check that out.
It's great. And it's a really quick read, and it was a refreshing read for me because it's less horror, more fantasy with kind of like dark romance as well. But it really is like kind of, it's a very immersive read, if I can use that pun.
I was telling you earlier, I started watching the episode for Deep Trouble, which is a two-parter.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So I only watched like a few minutes of part two. But I do love that in Goosebumps, there are several books where it's not just two kids in a suburban neighborhood. He plays with different settings. Like, oh, A Night in Terror Tower. They are in Europe doing museum tours.
Right. Oh, I forgot about that.
And they end up waking up in medieval times.
That is wild.
That was the one my son noped out of. No, thank you.
He's like, don't you dare take me to medieval times.
All right. My next pick. Also for mine, I did an adult book, a middle grade book, and a YA book because Goosebumps was such a gateway and an entry point. I wanted to do kind of something for each age range.
Oh, I love that.
So this is my middle grade pick. So this is for The Scarecrow Walks at Midnight, which I remember being a very scary episode.
Very scary, yes. And although I sometimes conflate it with the Are You Afraid of the Dark episode, which is the tale of the Silent Guardian or something like that, which also has a scarecrow that walks at midnight.
I used to be obsessed with Are You Afraid of the Dark? But now recalling like specific episodes is really hard for me. I feel like I can only remember a handful.
Yeah.
They're on Paramount Plus. I should just go back and watch them. But I am pairing The Scarecrow Walks at Midnight with Small Spaces by Catherine Arden. So the synopsis for Scarecrow Walks at Midnight is Jody loves visiting her grandparents' farm. Okay, so it's not the most exciting place in the world. Still, Grandpa tells scary stories, and Grandma's chocolate chip pancakes are the best. But this summer, the farm has really changed. The cornfields are sparse. Grandma and Grandpa seem worn out, and the single scarecrow has been replaced by 12 evil-looking ones. Then one night, Jody sees something really odd. The scarecrows seem to be moving, twitching on their stakes, coming alive. I remember watching this episode. I feel like I watched it pretty recently, but when they go and visit the grandparents are acting really out of character, and I thought it was going to be like M. Night Shyamalan's The Visit.
Yes.
That was what I was expecting. I'm like, the scarecrows switched bodies with them. They are actually
totally. Oh, I remember this so now. When you read the chocolate chip pancakes, that clicked into my brain of like, now I remember the story so specifically. And yes, that the grandparents start acting weird because they're kind of, yeah. Oh.
But they're like being supernatural blackmailed, I guess, by their help. You just have to watch it.
Yep.
But Small Spaces was one of the middle grade picks for Summer Scares last year. And I'm really glad that I read it. It is, I don't know, it's pretty scary for a middle grade novel. So it follows Ollie, who is grieving. And when the book opens, she sees a woman in kind of old-timey clothes throwing a book into the water. And she goes after the book and just takes it to school. And of course, there's a field trip that day. And so like on her way to school, she's reading this book and it seems like this diary, this story of like these two brothers who were in love with the same woman. It just seems like a very deep history. But then the bus breaks down, of course, like right by a cornfield where there's just scarecrows everywhere. And the teacher has to go off to find help. And she just leaves all these students with this bus driver who just like turns around and looks at these children and tells them that they need to avoid big fields and they need to stay small. And so Ollie and two other kids go off to try to figure out what's going on. And this, I don't know, the stuff that they find and the people they run into, imagery was terrifying.
Yeah, I actually read this one and I was surprised by how intense it was.
They meet a woman like stuck in a time loop.
Yeah, it's haunting.
And there's evil scarecrows.
And just the image of the, oh yeah, those scarecrows. Yep. The cover is beautiful. And the image of like a bus kind of stuck in the middle of surrounded by scarecrows is just like, ooh, that's a really primal childhood fear image.
And the only adult that you trust to keep you safe just left. Left you with like a bunch of other kids and a creepy bus driver in a field of scarecrows. And apparently it's a series. I have not continued on with it, but I should. I had fun with this one. Yeah. So that is The Scarecrow Walks at Midnight with Small Spaces by Katherine Arden.
Such an excellent pairing. I, for my second choice, went with The Werewolf of Fever Swamp, which is apparently a big
fan favorite.
Who knew? I wouldn't have thought that. The synopsis for that one is, there's something horrible happening in Fever Swamp. Something really horrible. It started with the strange howling at night. Then there was the rabbit, torn to shreds. Everyone thinks Grady's new dog is responsible. After all, he looks just like a wolf, and he seems a little on the wild side. But Grady knows his dog is just a regular old dog, and most dogs don't howl at the moon, or disappear at midnight, or change into terrifying creatures when the moon is full. Or do they? I love getting to notice that a lot of these synopses end with, or do they? This is
how I describe books. I went to the R.L. Stine school of synopses writing.
Right? This is, I mean, I had that was a big reference point in Candy Cane Kills and writing the cover synopses and all of that was just like, what would R.L. Stine do? So this is a werewolf book. And I paired it with a book that's not a werewolf book, but it is called Sawtooth, written by Steph Nelson. It was put out by Cemetery Gates Media last year. This is also a novella. Most of my picks are novellas because I thought that would pair nicely with the sort of short reads of Goosebumps. And it does not have a werewolf, but it has a hungry, howling creature in the wilderness, a sort of supernatural predator called the Sawtooth. And it is about a woman named Taryn who is hiking into the Sawtooth Mountains to go spread the ashes of her wife, Gemma. And while she is there, encounters this creature of local lore. And this one is just super fun. It's a really quick read. It's got great character development and has the sort of grief horror element of someone who's in mourning and going to spread the ashes. And then it just collides with this creature feature. So it's got a lot packed into a short read. I read it in one sitting. So it feels kind of like hike in and hike out of the horror kind of situation. But it's really, if you like werewolf books, you like kind of creature features, this one plays with those elements really well.
Really good. I love that they're all novellas too. That is a good length pairing.
I've been reading a lot more novellas recently and just loving the quick reads. Now when I pick up a novel, I'm like, 300 pages. That's so many words.
My brain does that for anything over 350 pages. Yep. I if once it is past 350 pages, my brain says, this is where a book ends. Like, why?
I am very much the same way. And I'm similar with movies, especially like horror movies. I'm like, all right, if this runtime is more than an hour and 45 minutes, are you really going to earn it? I just saw Lisa Frankenstein last night and it was like hour 40. It was perfect.
Okay. My last pairing is listener favorite and famously the first Goosebumps book, Welcome to Dead House, which is also a scary episode.
Yeah. That I remember being pretty iconic. It set the tone on all fronts.
I'll read the synopsis and then I'll talk about the episode because I do want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Amanda and Josh think the old house they have just moved into is weird, spooky, possibly haunted. And the town of Dark Falls is pretty strange too. Love that name. But their parents don't believe them. You'll get used to it, they say. Go out and make some new friends. So Amanda and Josh do. But these new friends are not exactly what their parents have in mind because they want to be friends forever.
Yes! Oh, now I really remember. Yeah.
Yeah, where it's like they're ghost neighbors.
Yeah.
And in the show, once they reveal that they are in fact ghost neighbors, they're gray.
That's right.
And then they're leaving the town. Everyone packs up in the station wagon and runs out of there. And they see their dog. They left without their dog. They thought they lost their dog. They see the dog on the side of the road and they pull over and they're like, get in the car. The dog gets in the car. It's a ghost dog.
No.
It's gray.
No. Oh. That's so good. I just like picturing R.L. Stine writing that ending and be like,
yeah.
Ghost dog. It's like, this series is going to run forever.
It basically did. It's still going.
Yep. Oh, bless.
You know what? No complaints. About his appeal, too. I think a lot of it is that he understood the anxieties of kids that age, things like moving to a new town, having your parents not believe you when you try to talk to them about things you're worried about.
It's so true. And yeah, that's what I was thinking when you were describing that plot of just like, oh yeah, the young anxiety of like making new friends. And yeah, and then yeah, when they turn out to be ghosts, we've all been there. All been there.
Just remember having to add that to my list of anxieties. What if they don't like me? But also, what if they're ghosts? So I paired this with two YA novels, Horrid by Katrina Leno and White Smoke by Tiffany D. Jackson. Both are stories about teenagers moving to a new town and coming across something haunted, probably, by the past. In Horrid, it's been a few years since I've read it, but I believe the dad has died. So her and her mom are moving back to the mom's childhood home, which apparently is the creepy house on the block that people whisper about.
Of course.
And her mom being really dodgy about why that is and what exactly happened there.
The parents just don't understand. They're always keeping secrets.
And then White Smoke was really good. It was a newly blended family. And the mom got some type of grant. And part of that grant was that she got free housing. And they move into this house on a cul-de-sac, but all the other houses are kind of old and abandoned. Like, it's a work in progress. They're working on renovating the neighborhood type of thing. But there's also a lot of whispers about the house they live and the circumstances around it. And this one's really good. So I don't want to say too much because the where it goes is really good. It's one of those you just have to read it.
I have actually read this one.
And yeah.
Great. Yeah. It's, yeah, I agree. It goes in some unexpected places. Yeah.
Yeah, her stepsister just starts talking about like a new friend she's made, and she starts just referencing someone that no one has seen. Everyone just starts hearing things in this old house. Again, I don't want to say, you just need to read it. But yeah, two YA novels that deal with the anxieties of moving to a new place. And what if you have the creepy house on the street? What if your neighbors are ghosts? Like, who knows? What if the ghosts are in your house?
Oh man.
So that is Horrid by Katrina Leno and White Smoke by Tiffany D. Jackson, and pairing both of those with Welcome to Dead House.
My next one is another... My next Goosebumps book is the classic fan favorite Piano Lessons Can Be Murder.
Yes.
And the synopsis of this one. When Jerry finds a dusty old piano in the attic of his new house, of course it's a new house, his parents offer to pay for lessons. At first, taking piano lessons seems like a cool idea, but there's something creepy about Jerry's piano teacher, Dr. Shriek. That's S-H-R-E-E-K, so nothing suspicious at all. Something really creepy, something Jerry can't quite put his finger on. Then Jerry hears the stories, terrifying stories, about the students at Dr. Shriek's music school, students who went in for a lesson and never came out. So, yeah, this book, I mean, iconic cover of just like two free-floating severed hands playing piano. I paired this one with another book about a deadly teacher. This is Violent Faculties by Charlene Elsby. That is coming from Clash Books. I got to read it early for a blurb, so it comes out in February, though I'm not sure when exactly. But man, this book, it is about a philosophy professor. And when her department gets its funding cut, she begins her own sort of violent philosophical experiments at her home with various victims. So I won't say too much again because novella, it's so short, but it is kind of like extreme horror novella mashed up with like an academic dissertation with like footnotes and everything. And I just like, yeah, ate it up because it really, it both makes you think and makes you want to gag in equal measures as these experiments are carried out that are meant to kind of tackle philosophical ideas. It's a doozy.
Is she just kidnapping people and posing philosophical questions to them while torturing them?
No, it's actually less about what she likes. It's not as conversational. It's more that the things that she's doing to them are, yeah, it's hard to describe. And I'll just
have to read it.
Just horrifying. But really, really a memorable read. And yeah, I just remember, you know, the fear of a teacher who might be have a killer instinct, I thought paired well with Piano Lessons Can Be Murder. Although I believe the twist in Piano Lessons Can Be Murder is another robot twist, isn't it?
I can't remember. And I know I just said my son watched it on a loop. I don't remember the twist.
I think Dr. Shriek is a robot and he's killing children for their hands for question mark reason. But that's kids. I think kids get killed in that book, right? For their hands? That's probably why.
I think so. there were books where children died for sure. I remember it was the Curse of Camp Cold Lake.
Oh.
That's the one that has the water and it's like the ghostly,
yes,
like face coming out. And it was, I remember it was a girl who was not getting along with other people at camp. So she wanted to fake drown to see if people would come rescue her or something. But while she was down there, she saw a ghost.
That's just,
it's giving, wow. It's giving What Lies Beneath.
Yep. But... oh man. I love that impulse of a judge to fake drown for attention. That's so good.
You had one more, right? I should have let you go first.
Oh, that's okay. This will be a bonus one.
Yeah.
Because this one is just too perfect not to pair. I am going to give you Monster Blood 2. So not Monster Blood, but the sequel, Monster Blood 2. And that one picks up with Evan Ross, who can't stop thinking about Monster Blood and what happened last summer. It was so horrible, so terrifying. Too bad Evan's science teacher doesn't believe him. Now he's stuck cleaning out the hamster's cage as punishment for making up stories. Then Evan's friend Andy comes to town, and things go from bad to worse, because Andy's got a present for Evan. It's green and slimy, and it's starting to grow. So, Monster Blood is just about, like, killer green slime, I believe?
Okay, but this was the era of Nickelodeon slime, and I would have loved to have been given slime. My dream was to go to Universal Studios and be slimed.
I think for me, more than that, it was I wanted a piece of the was it the Aggro Crag? Is that what it was called? From Guts? The like glowing, which was probably just cheap styrofoam, but it looks so special. But
I wanted to go and figure it out, and I wanted to be slimed.
Yes. Yeah, the sliming just looked like a nice, just looked so cozy to be slimed. And also the era of Gak, which was like the slimy toy. But yeah, the first Monster Blood, I think the image on the cover was just like green slime creeping downstairs. Mm-hmm. But Monster Blood 2 is that hamster is just like oozing green slime and turned into a little hamster monster. And for that reason, I have paired it with Frostbite by Angela Sylvain. This was a debut novel from Dark Matter, Inc. And it is also a good pairing because it's set in the 90s. It is a throwback 90s creature feature where the prairie dogs get infected with alien parasites and go rabid, much like Monster Blood infected hamsters. And it's just super fun. If you enjoy Goosebumps, you really can't go wrong with this 90s throwback creature feature. And that is Frostbite by Angela Sylvain.
Oh, that's on my TBR.
Oh, you're going to love it. It's really fun. And there's a sequel coming too. So it fits right in line with Monster Blood 2.
Monster Blood 2, Frostbite 2.
Boom.
It's funny. I do love the random books that got sequels. I mean, Night of the Living Dummy was popular, so I can see why there was three.
Oh, that's right.
Three Night of the Living Dummies. Which is a part of the horror tradition. If something is good, you gotta give it at least a sequel.
Gotta do a sequel. I'm certainly in favor of it.
Okay. Are we ready to talk chilling obsessions?
So ready. What is your chilling obsession?
Nothing chilling recently. I started listening to a podcast. It does not need my endorsement. It's like a very well-known popular podcast. It's Normal Gossip, though.
Okay.
And essentially, it is people submit kind of wild gossip stories. And the host has a guest, and she just is such an amazing storyteller. But she will gossip and just relay this secondhand story. The stakes are low, but I am invested in every single story. And we can get into the commentary about how gossip is actually good for society. And it has always been a way to exchange information.
That's fascinating.
But it is fascinating. Just these stories, they take turns that you're not expecting. And then, you know, at the end, you know, she'll ask, like, who do you think is to blame in this situation? Or who, like, there was a story about a teenager who gets blamed for a water bottle full of vodka, and the mom is interrogating all of the siblings, and you kind of go through all of their alibis, and then at the end she asks, like, whose bottle do you think it was in the end? I think my favorite one was about this resort, and it was about this woman who became manager and was in charge of scheduling everyone, and you weren't allowed to schedule coworkers who were dating each other. And she became obsessed with whether these two coworkers were in a secret relationship, and it drove her insane. And it's just stories like that. They are low stakes, but I am invested.
I love that. That's such a great concept to just like plug you right into, yeah, just kind of the everyday gossip dramas and make it a, yeah.
There was one about like an Arizona town that had an animal mayor, and there was all this drama in the Facebook group with people nominating their pets, and then this person was posting too much, and like it's just low stakes, fun gossip.
That feels like a great antidote to all of the murder podcasts. Yeah. To just be like, let's just low stakes gossip about animal mayors. It sounds cozy.
It is. What have you been enjoying?
Well, I think for my chilling obsession, I'm going to talk about. So I mentioned I just moved to Arizona and discovered a store here called Terror Trader, and it is nationally recognized. It's only like a 10-15 minute ride for me, and it is just huge market for horror, for art and artists. They have like movie props, and they have like all the killer clowns like you from outer space that you can take photos in front of. And the owners also just started doing conventions here called the Gathering of the Ghouls and A Christmas to Dismember. So
I love that.
I know. It was a big comfort when I moved here to discover that this place existed. And I will just go there if I'm like in the area. I'll just like stop in just to like, you know, just like walk through the aisles and soak up all of the great. It's like lots of local vendors that are all kind of, you know, rent space in the market essentially. And they have like a little faux VHS rental corner where there's always a movie playing on the little old TV. There's a little like Evil Dead section where that tape is on constant loop. It's just a cozy little horror store. Yeah.
These sound like the best vibes. I would also be constantly there just to soak in the vibes, like recharge.
Exactly. It's good for the soul just to go say hi to the killer clowns and look at the beautiful horror art that people have created. And they've got all these old back issues of Fangoria on display. And yeah, it's a real comfort spot.
I love that. What was it called again?
Terror Trader. So they have a pretty huge following on Instagram too. So you can check out everything that they're up to. They had a really fun event on Halloween, and
that's cool. I think I might check them out. I'm gonna follow them.
Give them a follow.
And our second tradition on this podcast is to ask our guests for a Final Girl song.
I can't believe it's happening. All right, I was torn between two choices, but I think I have to go with The Taste of Ink by The Used. Yes. Because I wanted something. I created my own parameters for myself. I was like, you have to pick a song that was like big for you in high school, because that's like, you know, that's the Final Girl era. And so, yeah, I was thinking about emo songs, and Taste of Ink just feels like that anthem of like, I'm not dead yet. And the specific lyrics to me that are very Final Girly are, at last it's finally over, couldn't take this town much longer. Being half dead wasn't what I planned to be, now I'm ready to be free. And then also, so here I am, it's in my hand, and I'll savor every moment of this. So the it's in my hand, I'm just picturing the Final Girl picking up the killer's machete or whatever it is and being like, now it's in my hand and I'm gonna kill you. But yeah, it's just an anthem that I feel like has that third act energy of like,
oh yeah,
we're living.
And so here I am, alive at last.
Alive at last. Exactly.
Perfect. God, I was obsessed with that album.
It was so good. Box Full of Sharp Objects. Was that the title of a song? There's so many.
It was that emo era of like super long titles.
Yes. Okay, I Believe You But My Tommy Gun Don't. There's just lots of titles like that.
Where can people find you online?
I can be found. mostly on Instagram these days, sometimes on Threads, still on Twitter. All of the above is at Brian McWriter. And that's the name of the title of my website as well. And the two books I have out are Curse of the Reaper, which is a Hollywood horror novel, and Candy Cane Kills, which is a Christmas slasher that is very much, it's in a series that's being called Goosebumps for Grownups. So if you like Goosebumps, oh, yeah. There you go. And there may be a sequel coming out this year.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. So keep an eye out for that.
Ooh, I'm excited.
It's been fun.
Thank you so much for coming on the show and talking Goosebumps.
Thank you so much for having me, Stephanie. This has been so much fun.
Books in the Freezer is a bi-weekly horror book recommendation podcast. We post episodes every other Tuesday. Come find us on TikTok, Threads, and Instagram at Books in the Freezer, or send us an email at booksinthefreezer@gmail.com. Show notes for this episode and all previous episodes are at booksinthefreezer.com, where you will find links for all of the books mentioned and a list of the movies mentioned and links to the Final Girl playlist and to our merch and affiliate links if you would like to support the show. If you're looking for other ways to show your support, you can become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/booksinthefreezer. There are three tiers of support: a Final Girl level, a axe-wielding maniac level, and a malevolent spirit level, with all kinds of different perks at each level. So check that out at patreon.com/booksinthefreezer. And if you are looking for a free way to show your love and support for the show, please share about the podcast on social media or leave a review on a site like Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or just interact with the Q&As after the episode on Spotify. I have been your host, Stephanie. Thank you so much for listening, and see you next time on Books in the Freezer.